Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 42. Our guest is Louis Laca, the president of corporate at Pulse Esports Gaming Arena. In this podcast, I chat with Louis about his history in esports. We talk about collegiate esports, and we also learn what Pulse is aiming to accomplish in the industry. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox with the Esports Business Network podcast. Today I'm joined by a special guest, Louis Laca of Pulse Esports Gaming Arena. Welcome to the show, Louis.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man, I've been looking forward to having you on the show. It's interesting because when I first got introduced to you, you jumped on the stage. I can't remember. I think I was hosting the room in Clubhouse, and you have a communications skill set, and you talk really eloquently about esports. A lot better than a lot of people who are in the industry. And that's why I was really, you know, looking forward to having you on the show, because I think you will, you'll communicate esports to the audience of people just trying to learn and get to know things better than I think a lot of people who host esports 101 rooms or, you know, just have this elite mentality about esports. And I think that what you're doing with the gaming arena is big. And before we go too far into what's going on with Pulse, I want to get to know Louis a little bit better. Tell me, how did you get into gaming and esports? Maybe what was your first game growing up?
So my very first game was, I'll say, Halo 2. Like, I played on the Xbox, played on LAN centers with my friends. You know, we connected both the Xboxes, playing 8 players against 4-on-4. That was my life growing up in, you know, the Bronx of New York. And that, a lot of the times, was, you know, that experience of homeland building and playing with each other. So getting through high school, I started playing more online games. That's when Overwatch came out. And I got a full ride to go to Robert Morse University, the first university that did esports and did college, you know, scholarships. And that's where I got in. And I realized that, you know, this opportunity to go to university for free just for playing video games was something I wish that every kid had. And that was my interpretation of that. Like, I loved playing video games, but to be able to go to college and be able to get a degree and not worry about debt is one of the greatest feelings in the world. And to me, I love soccer, but I'm not a big athlete guy. I love soccer, but not in the sense of playing it every day or being on a pro team. But video games was that I wanted to be on a pro team. But then I realized shortly after that, go ahead.
No. I just said, wow.
Yeah.
I think what you're saying is actually quite shocking, because you don't hear a lot of success stories coming out of esports collegiate programs.
Yeah, like, one of the biggest things is I chose not to be a pro player. So I had offers to be a pro player. I chose not to because I saw esports as a fun and entertainment side. I did not see it as a sport at the time, right? So I felt, to me, it was just for fun, and I felt like if I went into the professional, it will look more like a job rather than being fun. And then, you know, from there, I wanted to go more into the business side. I felt that esports is lacking a lot in business professionals, not in the sense where, you know, there are professionals that know their craft, they understand their place, but they don't understand the esports aspect of it, right? That, you know, esports is ever changing. It's one of the most adaptable industries in our era, really. And that's why I think one of the biggest things is, you know, people that are fans of video games can't transition into the business side if you put your mindset to it. And that's where I started off. From there, I graduated from Robert Morse University with my bachelor's and my master's together. That paid for both of them. And I went to Charlotte Phoenix. In Charlotte Phoenix, I worked as a director of partnerships and relationships. during that time, COVID got hit, so I got laid off, and then I got put up to with Pulse. And with Pulse, we're doing a huge thing where we're building a close to a 5,000 seat stadium outside of Hamilton. I can't say specifically the names or the partners, but you know, in the next 3 to 4 years, you're going to see a huge venue over there. We're working on building some stuff in New York, Denver, Vegas, hopefully Florida. So we're really looking to expand out into North America and, you know, help esports to be that impactful thing I believe it should be.
This is more like getting to know you a lot better now. I didn't know the backstory about Robert Morris and getting a scholarship to go and do your studies via the game Overwatch. That's crazy. Wow. I think a lot of people a lot of people that are curious about collegiate esports are wondering what it is that makes it stable enough to sustain, you know, paying tuitions, paying housing costs, and covering someone's education. I think a lot of people see it still as a not a varsity program, but a part of the student affairs or and it's more club like. And so when I hear your story about having, you know, gotten a full ride to Robert Morris University, which I understand is like one of the first ever esports collegiate programs, I think at a varsity level, and then being able to take that, not only get your bachelor's degree but also get your master's degree, and then go into, you know, pursuing a professional career within esports rather than going a different direction in a different industry, maybe more traditional, like the music industry, fashion, or some other industry outside of gaming and esports. Because you hear all the time kids who participated in varsity programs or participated in clubs, but not finding a place in the industry to create a healthy, sustainable lifestyle. And so I'm kind of just like kind of in awe of that story, because I'm sure you heard the horror stories of people who haven't made it. And like, you probably have seen what went wrong in those collegiate programs to be like, what could have went right if they followed maybe the same, you know, structure or pattern that Robert Morris provided for you.
Yeah, a lot of universities, bigger issues is, you know, understanding what the game or the industry of esports is really, right? And I think in the current era we're going towards, it's looking like more universities are starting to understand that. Like this, I believe that the University of Iron out in California made that a certification program, right? And, you know, a lot of people have been saying negative things about it, but I think people are misunderstanding the importance of having that certification program, really, and how it really does help stabilize esports on not only on the college side, but on the professional side, right? Even in terms of like transitions, players, coaching, management staff, all of those things have a clear picture of it. A lot of the times it's based on, you know, the pro teams or the organizations randomly looking for it or you know, skimming through 4,000 applications a day to see how that works. And the certification really does help fix that sort of problem, right? Like, you might not get, you know, people are misunderstanding that, you know, this is going to get you a TSM job. It won't. You have to realize that TSM has like 10 positions that are opening up, right? That's out of the thousands and thousands of applications. But you know what? Who it does help that certification? It helps MSI. It helps Riot, Blizzard, to weed out people who, you know, might not understand the industry yet and help them understand it better.
Yeah, it does from a lot of different angles when you look at, you know, community colleges getting involved, online universities, traditional universities, and different things. In some cases, it feels as though it's a cash grab because they assign somebody who's maybe not, you know, doesn't have any experience in esports or doesn't have any has experience in traditional sports or some other venture or industry to lead a program that's maybe club based and not even at the varsity level. So it does sometimes feel like a cash grab. So when you mentioned UCI is a little bit, you know, it feels weird because they do have their online programs through Coursera, and they do, but they also have a physical, like they have physical programs at the university. Right. And so that's maybe more, you know, less, doesn't seem less as scammy as the online Coursera stuff, because there's actually, you know, people that you're networking with and in theory, and this doesn't go, this is not, you know, this is not only subject to like the esports stuff. You know, there's plenty of other programs that people get into, even myself, I feel like, you know, that you learn the skill set, but you don't necessarily get the network, right? So, you know, it in person, it might be different than online. I understand the cash grab scamminess that people think that it is. But it, you know, a lot of things need participation, and online programs are going to get better too. Don't get me wrong. Yep. There, the more that experienced professional people get into the conversation and do lead programs online, those programs will lead to potentially jobs at Hunter Thieves, jobs at DreamHack, or different, you know, different tournament organization and organizations, teams. So it is a building process. I think we're just like kind of early. It was very early, you know. There's like three topics right now that people are obsessed with: blockchain, including NFTs, esports, and the cannabis business. So like those three things that people are pursuing, like the foundations to those businesses are still being built. So when we look at, I guess, when we look at gaming esports and your experience now at like the Charlotte Phoenix, moving a little bit down in your history, what was it that you really felt like was the differentiating factor from what you were learning in college to what was like actually in application at the professional level?
I'll say this. College to me, and I think it's a lot of people, is you may be able to learn everything in class and understand the concepts of everything, but the most important thing is networking. When you're at university, you should know how to build that networking relationship. Everything else you'll learn on the job. So when my plan wasn't to go into directors of partnerships and relationships, like that wasn't the thought when I graduated. My thought was, you know, I was just going to be an accountant for a regular company outside, but I saw the opportunity there. And, you know, like we said in the beginning, I love to talk to people, and that's like, I loved building that relationship. And they offered me this opportunity, and I thought that was like the greatest thing I can do, right? Like that transitions me into what I love to do and enjoy. So I think people should be more open to the idea that your degree doesn't dictate what you do in any of the esports, as long as you have the network and the like track record to back it up, right? So, you know, you could have a management degree, but you can definitely just be a social media guy that's done all the work for social media, and you understand the concept, and you know people know that you do that, and that's fine, right? Your degree doesn't necessarily determine that, but it is a good stepping stone to that, right? Like it will weed out people that they don't want.
Yeah, I think the human resources departments at esports organizations, at gaming hardware companies, and pretty much anything that's endemic to the esports and gaming industry, they are challenged with trying to figure out and weed out the people who are snake oil salesmen, the people who are, you know, mm-hmm. bad actors, people who are, you know, fabricating this kind of experience in their resume that may not actually really depict like their actual ability to do or like execute on actionables. And so like the programs do, I guess the programs kind of show that someone's willing to take initiative and try to try to learn on their own or like go through the process.
Yeah.
Of learning free sports.
I think when you're in a college program, the biggest thing you should realize is that you're there for learning. You're there for practical experience. One of the things that Robert Morse taught me that is that, you know, whatever you do at the university is based off what you can put on a resume and everything you want to do, right? So I was still a player at Robert Morse University, but I heavily worked with my directors in sitting in offices and talking to like partnerships and relationships. One of the biggest things about Robert Morse University is that we had over 20 partnerships. We had one of the most partnerships at the time. Naming with, you know, G Fuel, iBuyPower, all of these companies were working with us in agreements. And like, that's like, I sat through all those meetings. One of the things I wanted to learn that, because I thought that was so important to learn, not as just a player, but as a person that's graduating with a degree. And, you know, with those types of networkings and having those types of connections helps you so much when you're going up and through the esports like industry.
Yeah, I think people, even like myself, who struggle with finding direction in life, let alone, you know, going to the grocery store, like when you should go to the grocery store, like when you need to clean, make your bed and these sort of things, you know, because I personally have like a lot of things coming at me all the time, different opportunities, different options, and like choosing, making a good choice is one of those things that is very challenging for me. And so when I hear of people who have really successful experiences in college and university, like yourself, that's not necessarily the experience everyone receives.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I just, you know, for those out there that are like in a university or college experience, that just feels like it's just stuck, you know, it just feels like nothing's going on at their university or their program. And they don't have anything going on. I want to say is like, take initiative to make the thing happen. Yep. Like, yeah, go like, if these words and what he's saying motivate you to do something, go and try to reach out to G Fuel. Yeah, go do it for yourself. If your program leaders aren't doing it for you, go, you know, stick your neck out there. I don't think you can get kicked out of university if you're paying student for, you know, trying to pursue getting sponsorships or some sort of endorsement for your collegiate program. Dropped out. Had a little bit of a technical issue there, but we're back.
Yeah, no problem. But I think the biggest thing you have to realize is the worst thing they can say is no. The worst thing a company or a sponsor or your school can say is no. So why not just try it? Try every possible way to enhance your experience at the school or enhance your experience in your program, right? The worst thing they can say is a no. So I thought that initiative in my head where if nothing's going to happen, if nothing's going to change, then all options are available. There's nothing that isn't on the table that you can't do because no one else is doing it and they're not pushing for it. So that's at least my thought process on it.
So now we talked a little bit about collegiate. We talked about your time at Charlotte Phoenix. What's going on with Pulse Gaming Arena? Tell us about it a little bit more in detail. You brought it up, or you mentioned it earlier, but I want to know a little bit more in detail. This is like the new premier Canadian venue for esports and gaming.
So our thought process is that esports is lacking in one of the major factors of the ecosystem, right? And understanding that what the ecosystem is that, you know, everyone is doing one-off tournaments and like you know, doing one-off events, right? But no one's really having the whole series or the whole event hosting it and understanding like how to build that up. And, you know, it created this huge disparity. Right now, COVID changed the whole game, changed everything we do in esports, right? Everything went to online, and then you start to realize what are the big heavy hitters and the problems we have with esports, right? And we want to solve that problem. We want to solve the problem of, you know, the cheating that happens in esports through online gaming. Because if you do more in-person events and, you know, have that like consistent, people would go to it. People will move, even move near it, train out of there and play out of there to be with the best of the best and create that ladder system that people need, right? Esports, at least in the North America region, one of the biggest lacking points in the whole industry is that, you know, there's no talent development. How do you know who the next ninja is going to be for Fortnite? How do you know who's going to be the next Shroud, the next Tyler One, or who's going to be the next like Bjergsen? You just don't. And at least in North America, there's no step forward towards that. But you know who does have that? China and Korea. Korea has the system down to the T. And I think that's the adaptation we really need in order to really develop North America. North America is one of the biggest things about North America is that we have money. We do not lack in money, but what we do lack is talent. It's creating that talent pool, the development side. And that's, I think, the hugest focus of ours is that we don't want to have all the premier tournaments in the world, right? Our goal is, you know, if you wanted to watch, like, say, the ESEA matches that are happening in each different town, you can go and do that, right? If you want to watch the Valorant Tier 2 series or the Valorant Tier 1 series in a few of our locations, that will be there. So you have that feeling of being a part of the community and everything not being out of California too.
Okay, so with Pulse Esports Gaming Arena, are you hosting nightlife events or what kind of environment is it? Is it family friendly? What is the experience when someone comes and attends the venue?
Absolutely. So I'll bring you through a day of what we assume our whole experience should be, right? So in the morning, we work with a lot of universities and high schools to do training programs, right? So we're specifically working with the university and college, not going to say the names because it's NDA, but we're working with them to create a curriculum in not as a degree, but like as a minor, right? To understand the industry and get that certification with them. And what they do in the morning is they'll learn through art, the practical side, right? They'll come in and, you know, our casters that's working on developing, like say the analyst desk, right? He can now teach that class for them, right? He can teach them how the analyst desk works, how to be an analyst. Or another example is, you know, we have a lot of networking and we have a lot of computers that are working out. We have a guide directly for the network and the server production, right? Like all of those aspects, they're co-op classes where kids will come into our facility and actually learn how to use these machines and how to perform and how to do the production, how to do the casting, how to fix anything, and how to manage and run the tournament. Those are our morning things. In the afternoon, leads to more of the professional teams coming in and, you know, setting up matches and scrims and having all those things that they need to be done, you know, analyst reviews, maybe even create a video or an edit them on their training side so we can have that production side. And then nights are usually going to be the final matches, you know, their live show matches where we do the analyst desk, we do the post-game interviews, we do all of those sort of situations. And if there's days that we don't have you know, tournament matches, we work with a lot of corporate companies to do corporate events. So yeah, it's a little bit of everything. And we enjoy that aspect, but that's part of the ecosystem, right? That's understanding that esports is all of this. It's not just gaming. It's the entertainment side. It's the production side. It's the training side. It's all of that.
Okay. And so when it is Monday, Monday through Saturday, what's the sort of
7 days a week
operating hours?
So we're looking at 7 days a week. We don't have a specific time yet because we, you know, in reality, if we're 24 hours a day and we have an event going for 24 hours a day, trust me, we will not stop doing those. But, you know, the time is flexible. We're not really like set on times yet. But, you know, we're definitely working all 7 days a week. That's guaranteed.
7 days a week. And so do you have a full service bar as well?
Yep. The bar is over there. We're actually partnering with a couple of restaurants that are going to be in there too. So the big facility is going to have around hopefully 3 to 4 restaurants, 2 bars, and then maybe another entertainment district, like when we say entertainment district, we mean like say having like virtual reality stations outside so people can okay. you know, try out virtual reality. You know, we're really open to almost everything. We want when the person comes to our venue, we want to have the best experience possible. It's the same way when you go to a football stadium and you go to a soccer game, you have that feeling of, you know, enthusiasm of being a part of this huge community, the supporting the group or the team that you want. We want to emulate that experience.
So are you going to have private skyboxes, you know, above the arena?
Yeah, we definitely will.
So what is like a VIP experience for someone who's attending an event?
So our VIP is really like, you know, you would see in a stadium, right? It's a lot of networking. So a lot of VIP guys are the network. They like to talk around, mingle with each other. So we created a space for that. You know, there's a bar upstairs. There's a video shoot for those. There's anything they really need. So VIP is very helpful for people who are trying to get into the industry and want to have that network experience, right? So I've been to a lot of those VIP rooms where if you go to, like, say, a Citi Field event, right? And you'll notice that all the executives are always in the VIP area. They're always there talking, chatting with each other. And, you know, our hope is that, you know, we'll have companies like them come in. And now if you come to our event and go through VIP, you might have opportunity to have a job interview. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys are really open to talking with everybody.
Absolutely. And so what's it like for an attendee with like the experience? Are they going to get the opportunity to get their, you know, pictures and videos for TikTok? Get like, is there some in-house stuff that you're putting out on social media? Like what's the experience? Tell me about like, is there swag to pick up when you're, you know, in the merchandise shop? What kind of experience is it?
Absolutely. So one of the things is we're definitely using right now we're developing our own fantasy betting app.
Okay.
And that is going to be a huge factor into like where you go, what swag you're going to get, right? You participating in on our event, we want you to be as enjoyable as possible. You know, we give out goodie bags. We're going to give out, you know, signage time. You know, there's going to be times where teams are going to be there signing autographs and photos. And on the phone, on the app, you get the update where they're at, exactly where you are to them, you know, where to go to. And we want to update you based off whatever you want, right? If you come here and you wanted to support, like, say, we're doing a CSGO event and Australis is here, right? And you want to support them, you're already on the app. You already put in the team that you're favorited. Then you will find everything they're doing, every part of the Australis goodie bags. And it would be like, you know, we're creating as much of the open and fun experience as you could possibly have.
Okay, awesome. And so you talked a little bit about corporate events. So are you going to have, you know, panels happening, like maybe some industry events where people get to, you know, listen to guest speakers, you know, do some mixing rooms. TED Talks. Yeah, that type of thing. Are you going to have that happening? Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah, we want to make sure that not only that you get to come in here for the enjoyment of watching the game and being active, but on other days that you can come in and learn something or maybe get a job or, you know, we want to create opportunities for everybody. As much as, you know, we're doing this for the community, we want to make it so that anybody can get a job if they need it.
That's awesome. So what do you think is set you guys apart from a lot of the other esports venues that are coming around, like the Fusion Arena or Esports Stadium Arlington?
Yeah, one of the biggest things is that we're really focused on content, right? So working with us, we want to create. We're looking already to creating our, like, pretty much our ESPN radar. So, like, the esports radar, where you can watch the post-game analyst, the post-game interview of the game, interviews, you know, having segues, hearing people's opinions on the teams, who's winning, who's not winning. That's one of the aspects of it. And as well as, you know, we're implementing outside of just that, we want to create an entertainment television network. So, meaning, you know, we're working with a lot of musicians, a lot of concert creatives, and a lot of podcasts that we're trying to get on board to be on television, to be on streaming platform, so we can like promote as much content as possible, right? That's the idea. I think one of the biggest things we set apart from different. Another biggest thing is that in one location, we're opening this up in multiple locations and we want to be intertwined, right? So for example, if League of Legends wants to leave California and they need places to go, we have four or five locations outside all around the United States. You can travel through those and they don't have to worry about that.
Okay. You know, that leads a lot of questions that I might have. The first one that came to mind was, what are you doing for streamers and, you know, social media, content creators, YouTubers, like what kind of, services and maybe like facilities do you have for them to maybe do an in-store or like, just like say one day they stop by and they want to, you know, do their stream from your venue, or host an event.
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking to partner with as many streamers and content creators as possible, right? Like one, if you see on our website, it's a stage area for like those types of comedy shows or podcast areas, right? And you can have active live viewers to come in and talk and discuss about questions. Those are sort of the things we were thinking of, as well as, you know, we, as much as we're making money, we want the content creator to make that money. So we're looking to always have revenue stream sharing with them and creating that ecosystem in which they want to be supported here. We have stream booths already dedicated for them, right? In the one in our website that has already five to 10 booths separately made just for streaming. So streamers can come in and do that, and gives the opportunities for kids that don't have all this huge setup to, you know, pay $5 an hour, $10 an hour to come in and use all the things they need to stream.
Okay. So you're, in addition to having a LAN center, which we'll talk about that a little bit, you're also going to have a studio, a stream studio section where, you know, up and coming streamers or people who, you know, just want to try it out can come test out and learn how to stream.
Yep. We want to, if you want to learn how to stream and you want to start streaming, you know, we don't want that the cost of having $5,000 to build your whole streaming setup be the issue, right? You come in here, you pay $10 an hour, and then you can use it as much as you want. That's the impression we want everybody to have, right? Every person that wants to be a streamer can have that opportunity.
So how are you guys building the relationships with the publishers? What's the process of making it so that you can have a League of Legends event, have a, you know, a StarCraft event, or talk about Rocket League, or what are you doing, and how can you, what are like, what's the big question publishers ask when you're pitching the idea of their event coming to you?
The biggest question I feel that usually happens is, like, you know, what sets us different? What sets us different, really? And that question comes back to, you know, we want to be, if a company wants to come in and not, and wants to just do an event, we don't want that. We'll do it, but we don't want that. Our relationship wants to be is, we want to be a part of everything that company does. So if Riot wants to wants to leave California because of, for whatever reason they want to, we want to support that initiative that they want to do. We build that relationship with companies through what their goals are and what they want to do, and then see where that core aligns with us and how well we can adapt to it, right? So, I think that's a fair answer to say that a lot of our publishers that we're working with want to already start, you know, going out to different places, making sure that each area is building that community for them.
So... So your facilities are going to be like a leg a leg of the competition for a league to stop into the Ontario region, right? To have a presence in Canada.
Yeah. Well, that's not, like I said, that's not our only facility, and you know, we're actively already looking to look at 3 or 4 locations. So that's that. We're definitely looking at that. But one of the biggest problems we feel that North America has is that everything's based out of the U.S. There's not a lot of things. We don't really connect with Canada or Mexico in that sense. And, you know, we want to bridge that gap, right? We want to get Canada way more involved in esports than they are already. Because maybe people didn't realize this, but a lot of pro players come out of Canada. A lot of pro players that we have, like, if you think about it, are a lot of Canadians, but they don't get, I feel that Canada doesn't get enough representation in that esports aspect.
So
we want to really bridge that gap. We want to make sure that, you know, every place can feel the love of esports, right? Like, Hamilton's a small area, right? 20 minutes away from Toronto. So it's roughly, 2.1 million people in that area. There are huge esports fans there, but they never go to events because it's only in California usually. So imagine now having that 2.1 million people coming in and watching an event that, you know, now the publishers feel way more happy because they're able to get into areas that, you know, usually they wouldn't be able to if they don't have like a studio or a place to be.
And, you know, it should be mentioned, I guess this is sort of, you know, for those listening in the future, of course, this would be sort of a historical marker. But how have you guys been approaching, you know, COVID compliance and like safety as far as like that health and safety goes around venue spaces?
Yeah, so a lot of our team has come from different industries where they all have to be COVID compliant. So we took a lot of regulations from them, right? So one of our founders comes from the media production side. They work in studios, like active studios that are making movies and those sort of things. And they created policies and we were allowed to use those policies to reflect our company, right? We adapted it to what we think esports needs. So, you know, when it comes to size, spacing, and understanding that the, you know, everyone has to be distanced from each other, you know, be able to still hear and understand everybody, we are definitely in COVID compliant. I'll say COVID did hit us hard, don't get me wrong, but we needed to learn and adapt quickly, and that's what we did.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about like the safety aspect? Are you doing bag checks, metal detectors? What's that like?
Yeah, absolutely. So currently in the build out of the building, right? Because we're still building it. It's not going to happen within 1 or 2 years, at least the Hamilton one. We're hoping to get the other locations up and running before the end of the year, at least 1 or 2. Mm-hmm. But in terms of those facilities, yeah, we have back checks. We have security. We have obviously regulations that people must go through to come in and come out. And yeah, I think, you know, what you would expect from if you were going to a concert or a city or a football or a basketball event, you'll feel the same experience of going through those.
Oh, very cool. So I guess my next question is like, what do you guys foresee is going to be the future of gaming and esports? And how are you guys adapting to it? I mean, you're opening up a lot of facilities. Do you guys see localized franchise playing out to in the professional scene? Do you see more of an international scene that people are regularly traveling but staying in a certain place for, you know, 4 to 6 months? What do you guys think about the professional esports tournaments and leagues?
That's a great question. So I would give my opinion and how I think it's going to play out. And I think what's going to happen is a lot of these big esports organizations will be a time where they're going to start merging with professional sports and they're going to start being owned by professional teams, not like entirely, but they'll have a relationship with them. They'll be based out of cities again. Because I think what the Overwatch model happened, the problem with the Overwatch model happened is that the brands weren't connected really well with the cities, right? Where imagine TSM partners with the New York Yankees, and now they're still out of New York. They're out of New York, but TSM is repping that New York aspect, that New York feeling. And now you're going to see a lot of those acquisition merges happen. You're going to have those feelings where teams are going to be now leaving California to start looking at other avenues that can possibly happen.
Okay. That's really cool. And so this last question is just like a fun question. You know, for the listeners to just see what Lewis thinks about. We got to talk about NFTs a little bit, man. what do you think about the like adoption of NFTs and blockchain in esports and gaming? How the orgs are approaching it? What are your thoughts on NFTs and blockchain?
So I'm surprised that esports orgs haven't done NFTs prior. So what showed an example is like Tfue and Jake Paul were able to sell NFTs at a ridiculous price. I think content creators, esports orgs are going to look to content creators that they have and see what NFTs they can make with them. And that's what's going to be the next step. I think that's what should be the next step, right? If fans are supporting it, they should do those sort of things. And they'll love that. In terms of cryptocurrencies, I think it's a little bit too young. I think a lot of people need to be educated on how cryptocurrency works, because no one wants to go through 10 to 20 coins just to make a dollar, right? That's a hard iteration where you have to educate kids on cryptocurrency. So I think right now we're in that educational process, right? Maybe right now cryptocurrency isn't huge in esports, but I think in the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see a huge wave of kids being able to use cryptocurrency for any purchases in terms of like teams and organizations, right?
Yeah, I think you know, it's almost bringing a sort of monetary value to what were like rewards points or like loyalty tokens or whatever in other Chuck E. Cheese type environments, but actually putting like an actual monetary value on the cryptocurrency or blockchain currency, by then saying like Pulse Esports Gaming Arena, the more time you spend, the more time you collect these tokens, and the more successful the company becomes, the more valuable those tokens are, and you can spend them in house, out of house, wherever it may be. But you become more than just a consumer, but a supporter of the business of Pulse Esports Gaming Arena, to use you guys as an example, or Esports Business Network as an example too. But this is the future. I see it happening.
I'll say this: NFTs have a unique experience. Like, think about it like this, right? You already see it happening now, where you can buy a NFT and it comes with real life rewards for having that, right? So like, I don't know who what the musician or the artist was that did this, but he sold an NFT worth I think 1.2 million, but what he gets is for life, he gets to go to all his concerts VIP. That's huge. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's a huge benefit just to have that coin, right? And you know, being on the blockchain and being authenticity, there's only one. So only one person gets this unlimited access. You know, you're going to see that happen with a lot of other stuff. Or like, if, for example, Riot Games come out with one exclusive skin that only one person can have, right? And you trade your coin for that exclusive skin, or you own the skin because you have the coin. That's huge, right? Like, no one else can have it. So I think that's the beauty you're going to see with NFTs coming out.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I guess the blockchain enthusiasts out there, the most like interesting one was Uniswap, which is pretty much the main currency for NFTs right now. They created an NFT for a pair of socks. And then the NFT, if you cashed out the NFT, they shipped you the socks. But they were like, the socks were like one, if you cashed it out, it's like 1 point something million dollars for those socks. So whoever cashed those socks out was silly.
that's the part of the NFT game, right? You know,
you never know how much it's gonna be.
It can go from $30 to $2 to $1 million, and it's like cryptocurrency in that sense, where it's just volatile. You just won't know.
Yeah, super volatile. And so on the way, we're closing out here. Thank you very much for being on the show. I want to give you the opportunity to tell the listeners any big announcements that you need to get out there, any events that are coming up that you want the listeners and the audience to be a supporter of. And also just let them know where they can contact you, how they can follow you, and keep up to date with everything that you've got going on and with Pulse Gaming Arena.
Absolutely. So one of the biggest things is, you know, we're closing out this huge deal that's coming up. It's going to be announced through LinkedIn, hopefully Twitter, and all the other areas that we have. You know, look at, by the end of the year, you're going to be seeing a lot of news from us. So let's, hopefully you guys are supportive of us and everyone is supportive of us. I think the best way to contact me is LinkedIn. I usually use LinkedIn almost every day because business, every business transaction comes through LinkedIn. Trust me. If any kids needs to listen to this, have a LinkedIn already. But I think that's about it. Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity to be on your podcast. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Once again, Louis Laca, Pulse Esports Gaming Arena. Yeah. Follow him on LinkedIn. Connect with him over on Twitter, all over the place. Follow him. And once.
Hey y'all, it's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.